Welcome to the Justin and Ryan Bizarro Show. I'm Justin Bizarro. I'm your host. That's B-I-Z-Z-A-R-R-O. For anyone who's out there, you can find me on Instagram at Justin Bizarro. We don't have our own page for this show right now, but you can also find us at the Justin the Food Entrepreneur Show. That's our biggest one. So thank you, everyone, for listening in. Thank you, Spotify. You can find us there if you want to listen to us and these episodes. So grow yourself through podcasts. I heavily recommend it. So find them on Spotify. And I have a special guest with us, again, from Nashville. I spent some time down there running around like a boxer, is how I describe it, trying to find my entrepreneurial self again, around like creative people, being inspired by them, particularly musicians and artists and people in film and music. It's very inspiring that's going on down there. It's kind of an incredible thing. And so with that being said, I have with us today Lily Harrison. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. So first of all, tell us what the name of your band is.
So I have a band that came down to Nashville with me called Full Hollow. And I also am working on some individual stuff under the name Lily Bloom.
Cool. And where can they find your music?
Right now you can find our Full Hollow single anywhere you stream music, so Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon, wherever. And my Lily Bloom stuff hasn't come out yet, but it is coming and it'll be wherever you can stream.
That's pretty cool. So you're doing some solo work?
I am. I'm in the middle of writing an EP right now.
Very cool. How old are you, Lily?
I'm 23. I turned 23 in February.
There you go. How long have you been writing music?
Since forever. I think the first song I wrote was maybe, it was just this dumb little song about bluebirds, and I think I was 8 when I did it.
That's cool.
But I've always been doing poems.
So tell us your story. Like, where'd you grow up? How'd you find music? Like, when did you know you wanted to sing and chase a dream? Like, how did this all come together? Because it's quite a story for someone who's only 23 years old to have so much wisdom and experience and take the leap that you've taken. And not to mention have such talent that you worked on for many years.
Absolutely. Thank you. So I'm from Dothan, Alabama. It is deep southeast corner of Alabama, right next to Florida. I'm born and raised there. And there's not a whole lot to do down there, you know, except for stop by the Sonic, maybe wait for the Peanut Festival to come around. But I think I've always loved music. My parents told me when I was little, you know, I would make everyone be quiet so I could sing I'm a Little Teapot, you know. But I think I also have parents that really, really love music. They don't play anything, but my dad really inspired my love of rock and everything. I was growing up listening to Def Leppard and Led Zeppelin and all his bands. And I think there wasn't a huge outlet for music in Dothan. Pretty much the only places you could sing were church or school choir. And as soon as I was old enough, I did both, but I really discovered my love for it. It was in elementary school where there was kind of a Broadway showcase of the sort at church, and we each got to do one song to sing a solo for, and I did Poor Unfortunate Souls, and my mom sewed me a little Ursula costume. And it just came natural. Like, I was too young to be scared of anything. I just really fell in love with, you know, being in front of people, and I've always loved to sing, and it just kind of grew from there. Wherever I could find the opportunity, I would take it. And then I got old enough to realize you can't really wait for opportunities just to fall into your lap. You have to seek them out if it's something you truly love. So that's kind of what led me to Nashville.
Yeah, so let's talk about this. Like, okay, you start doing this. What happens when you're 18 years old and you're like, okay, what happens between 18 and 23? How do you get to where you are? How do you meet your band?
So a big part of it was I realized, I think when I was younger, you know, when I was 8, 9, 10 years old, I thought one day I'm going to be famous. I'm going to sing, you know, and then reality kind of hits. And in the back of your head, it's like, well, when I get a little older, you know, I'll get discovered. And that's not really how it works. It very minute percentage of the time, it's how it works. So I kind of got more realistic and just, if I can pay my bills singing, if I can find like-minded people, you know, or just have an outlet when I get off of work just to connect with music and people that love it, then I'll take that and I'll chase that. But it was actually in college. I ended up majoring in film and creative media because part of me had just been like, I don't know if it's super feasible anymore, but I'll still see seek opportunities where I can find it.
I bet that skill will come back into your life later on. You're only 23, making your own videos or something. That's kind of cool.
Oh, yeah. No, I fell in love with film and the art of filmmaking, but it never held a candle to music to me. You know, it was a second love. It was slightly more stable. It's a creative field, you know, and if I had to, I could work in a newsroom and make a decent living off of that. But in college, I had a group of friends that were doing open mic nights at a brewery. It's called Druid's Brewery, Druid City Brewery. It's really good. But I started watching my friend, and I asked him if maybe I could sing with them every other week. And we started doing that, and through that, I had another friend who has a band that was really spacey and weird, and I played with them for about 2 years, and that's how I actually met the group of guys that I'm playing music with now for Full Hollow. They were also in that band, and we all decided to pack up and move to Nashville, and some of us kind of parted ways a little bit, but I know some of the guys are running a house venue right now that's doing really well, and then the rest of us are just playing on Broadway and writing as we can. But I think it just became a thing where I don't have to kind of put myself in a box. I don't have to do a degree if it's not my first love. Like, I just have to find a city that's built for me and for people like me that love music. And that's kind of what led us all here. There's so much opportunity, and it's not a matter of, I don't have to compromise. I don't have to have a 9-to-5, or I don't have to waitress, so I can pay to sing and have gigs and make music. Like, music can be my 9-to-5, so I'm really grateful for that.
Yeah, absolutely, because not a lot of people can do what they love or want to do at all, or they don't even know what it is a lot of the time. So I think that's like, when you discover it and it's inside you, I always say that's like things that God instill inside of us, and then we need to water and grow ourselves. Like, we have to go through the experience. We have to put skin in the game, for lack of a better term. It doesn't magically just happen, and it's kind of funny how that works. But the what I like about it is how you've come together. I think, like, once you got to Nashville and you guys came, how did you find work? How did you go out and get gigs? How did you go? Well, also, I'm going to rewind back for a second. You mentioned the type of music, but what type of music do you guys play? What type of music do you write?
Right now, I would say it centers mostly around kind of blues rock, psychedelic rock, just all inside the rock realm. The band that kind of brought me to the guys I'm playing with right now was very experimental math rock, like very much on the fringes. And it was something I had to get used to, because it is so deep-rooted in music theory. Like, you have to know the rules to break them a little bit. But I will say it was really, really valuable for me kind of coming into my own. I don't have a lot of training, you know, music-wise. I never took theory classes, music theory, anything. It was just always something I loved. But it just, I realized it's kind of second nature. You know, everything makes sense. I have a kind of broader understanding. I can't define exactly what makes what, but it all kind of falls into place. And it makes you really adaptable, and I really loved learning different ways to, you know, play within the rules, break the rules. I learned rules that I didn't even know were there.
Yeah, it's kind of funny how that works, because I've heard this before, like with a lot of people I've hung around with, even New York, LA, Nashville musicians. Like, there's some people that it just sounds good. I'm just like, that just would never happen to me. I don't have any talent for playing an instrument or singing, for that matter, that I know of. And that's the kind of thing, like, it's just, one time I heard you say in a conversation that you just kept doing it until it sounded good. And I think that's like one of the things is, when you're comfortable with it and you become happy, it doesn't matter. You're just doing it because you love it, you know, and you kind of ease into it. So that's kind of cool. So once you got to Nashville, how did you find gigs? Like, how did you make your way there? Because I think, in and of itself, it's one thing to choose a city, but how do you make your way onto Broadway?
So there is a circuit that does, it's the Tootsie Circuit. They do open mic auditions every Saturday, and they're constantly bringing in new acts, new bands. And I think the first week before we even unpacked, we hopped right on that, my guys and I. And we did three songs, because we thought we'd have to do country And I've kind of figured out there's a lot of country. It's not just country Music City. It is Music City, you know.
Absolutely.
But there's a space for everyone's sound. But we did Gunpowder and Lead, Tennessee Whiskey, and then we did Peace of My Heart by Janis Joplin. And it actually went so well that they let us do a few more. I can't remember the other one, but I know, I think one of the last ones we did was The Ocean by Led Zeppelin, which is one of my favorite songs by them. But just immediately got picked up into that circuit. I'm no longer being actively scheduled there anymore at this point. The guys and I figured out it's a little more lucrative for us just to take fill-ins from bands that are kind of in need of a certain, you know, in need of a co-front because one of someone's voice hurts, you know, in need of a bassist because they don't have someone solid. Like, it's a little more lucrative for us right now just because with the other bar circuits, it can be hard getting on the roster as a full band.
Yeah, and one of the things is you probably have more time to write music. By not having such a set schedule, you can find gaps in time when you fill in to you guys to write music. But
absolutely.
I don't know. So
yeah, no, I'll say it's made a huge difference because that first year, you know, I was playing with my guys. I live with two of my bandmates. The other one lives about 3 minutes down the road, so he was over all the time. You know, we were hanging out in the same house all the time. We were rehearsing our set list, then going to play for 4 hours, 4 or 5 days a week, come back, and then just the last thing you want to do is kind of think about music. So I think it was good to have a little bit of separation just so I could fall in love with my craft again. Because although I am so thankful to have music as a day job, you know, it is easy to get jaded, you know, too much of a good thing.
Absolutely.
So you have to figure out a way to kind of separate that, separate the cover gigs from the original stuff, which is what we came for in the first place, you know.
So let's talk about what's your favorite song to sing that's not yours, and then what's your favorite song that you've sang that you've created so far, if that's possible. I always do this to people, like, oh my gosh, you always ask favorites. I'm like, yeah, I do, because I'm just curious.
Oh, there are so many. I think with my guys, I love Whipping Post by the Allman Brothers, but specifically like with my full hollow boys, just because I feel like there's a different kind of chemistry on stage. We can read each other and it's kind of become our own version in a way that I think is really powerful. And you can feel how much they love, you know, that band. Adam, my bass player, absolutely loves the Allman Brothers. And we all kind of fell in love with them too. I will say, just in general, any Led Zeppelin song is always fun for me. I love doing Whole Lotta Love. I love doing Janis Joplin. Just anything I really get to wail on, that's the stuff that, like, makes me burn, you know?
Absolutely. And how about your own music? Like, have you written something that you're like, this is my favorite that I've written so far? And like, let's talk about that. Like, how much time do you spend on it and before you feel comfortable, like, even writing your own music? Or is it just something that came naturally to you at 8 years old? The Bluebird song, which is kind of funny because the Bluebird in Nashville. I think it's called the Bluebird,
yeah,
right?
No, it is funny. I think it's funny. My favorite song that I've written so far, it's not streaming just yet, but it's called Amnesia. It's kind of a power ballad, which isn't usually my style, but that was one of those instances. I wrote it in a night with Kent, and it was one of those things. It took me about an hour, but it just flowed so easily. And I've always been huge into literature, poetry writing, storytelling, and I'll say sometimes it takes me a year before I'm happy with the song, and sometimes it's just born in the night and it'll be one of my favorite things that I've done. But I think a lot of my struggle with that is you get these once in a while works that you feel like are so good, so representative of you and your style, and it just flows so easily that it almost puts up a roadblock to where you feel like you have to top that the next time you write. So if it's not flowing as easily, I feel like it's not good. That's one of the things I've had to unlearn. I think I read somewhere writer's block is just fear of making something bad. But you have to get all the bad out before something flows, you know?
Yeah, and it's always like you always want to be more successful. You expect it to be like a climb, and it's like there's like it's cycles and ebbs and flows and valleys and mountains. And I think in a lot of crafts, are people who truly push themselves to do what they believe in, you know, entrepreneurs, leaders, artists, actors, you know, that type of field, musicians, like when you truly chase your dream, it's a, you know, it's a lot of learning, I feel like, and getting better, but sometimes taking steps backwards and reflecting, but it's just a crazy cycle.
It's kind of, it's a rebirth of a cycle. When I was in middle school, high school, I started learning guitar, and my mom would have to drag me out of my room. I'd come straight home from school and just play guitar and write songs, because it was just this really internal desire to create. And at that point, I was just writing it for the love of it. You know, I didn't think anyone would ever see it, because there wasn't a huge musical outlet. It was just a desire to kind of output this thing that I love so much. And now that I'm here with opportunities all around me, the city's built on music. There's stages and banks. You know, Nashville is a once-in-a-lifetime place. There's nowhere else like it. And I think the difference here is that everyone is so talented that it's hard not to compare, you know, and want to one-up others as well as yourself. So it's just relearning, like, I'm here because I love creating, not because I need to be the best.
Yeah. You know? And there's no other Lily out there, just you. You're the only one who can write to you. So comparison is just suffering, right? You're only going to be second best to someone else, but you're going to be first always to you, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And it's really cool, because I think you're on that level, and to have such wisdom at 23 years old, like, I probably wasn't thinking that way. You know, while I had success in my life in certain ways I didn't, I would say that running and being an entrepreneur, you just don't realize that. Maybe I did in any way. But so to think that way, I think you're exactly right. You got to do it because you love it. You got to do it because you want to inspire people, or motivate people, whatever is inspiring you. You know, so that's, like, really my next question is, like, what keeps you going every day? What keeps you getting up every day and keep writing? What gets you up every day and keep singing? Like, you know, what keeps you from getting tired from it? Is there something that motivates you? Is there a goal and a purpose in your life to get somewhere, for lack of a better way of phrasing it?
I think I've always kind of been wired to where I have to have something to look forward to, you know? There always has to be a goal that I'm working towards. And I know I've had hard days where, like, I didn't feel motivated here in Nashville singing, just because it all felt so monotonous and so routine. But it's just knowing how lucky I am to do what I love and pay my bills doing what I love, because so many people are stuck in a cycle of things they don't enjoy, and there's not many options like I have in the city. It's just not making my goals so grandiose. You know, it's not like next month I'm going to be a millionaire and have an album everyone's listening to. It's maybe each show I can work on, you know, be in this moment and be thankful, or, you know, I have a good crowd, let me give them a good show, you know, or I have a small room with two people in it, but, you know, let's make sure they leave saying, like, you're going to make it, you know?
Yeah.
It's just kind of baby steps, pretty much, is what keeps me going. I love music. I've been in a 9-to-5 office job. I've served tables, you know, and I've had jobs where I make a good bit more money than I am right now, but I couldn't compare the fulfillment to, you know, having a good show and having people enjoy you and feel enthralled by your voice, or, you know, just offer kind words like, I want to see you somewhere someday, you know?
Absolutely. And I think you're exactly right. It's about building the relationships right now and gaining momentum, and I think you do a good job of that, and your band as well. You guys build relationships. Part of being in other bands and going around and doing what you guys are doing and filling in is you got to build that network of people, which is pretty cool, you know, also within your groups. How did you choose... Go ahead.
Sorry, I was just going to say, I remember my first year of winter, we had a pretty slow season, and my friend Austin, I remember he came in and he said something that really put things into perspective for me, because I'm like, damn, I would rather be doing original shows. You know, damn, I'd rather be on a bigger stage playing to more people. It's cold. This sucks. And he said, you know, slow season is really what puts a lot of things into perspective for people. You're going to find out if you love making money or if you love performing. And that really stuck with me for a while. Like, what do I love? You know, would I trade this for a better paying job? Would I trade this for more stability? and I've gone over it in my head, and the weeks that I'm not here, like, I miss it terribly. You know, the weeks that I don't get to work, I crave it. And I think it's just having that space from it, you know, that distance makes the heart grow fonder, obviously, but it's not a fantasy dream all the time. You know, it is work and you get a lot of assholes and you have hard days, but it's also just, is there anything you would trade it for? And no, like, this has always been my first love, always.
So how did you decide to go to Nashville? I mean, were you thinking about it for a long time, or was it the band's like, let's take a shot at this? Like, how did you guys get to that conclusion? Because it's a group of you, I think, that came. But how did you decide, or you individually, how did you decide that this is the leap you were going to make?
Well, it's funny because in college, I had kind of given up on that dream a little bit. You know, I was like, okay, I got to get a big girl job now, because I didn't think there were places like this. And then when I joined that band, it kind of reignited the fire in me and the desire to do it. My plan was to go be a news reporter in New Orleans. And then we sat down, we're like, we could really, you know, make a real effort at this, just give it a shot, see if there's a place around for us. And we all did our research, and we had a meeting where everyone proposed their individual places that they wanted to go. And this was like right when quarantine started up, everything was shut down. And I was looking around, and I found Nashville still had bars open that were playing music, you know, and pre-quarantine, it just was like the mecca of working musicians. There was no shortage of work. There's venues everywhere. Everyone does the same thing. And so I made my case, and I won everybody over. I think one of our friends, other places in discussion were Portland and Austin, Texas, and there are a lot of good places. I think some of my fears for bigger cities like Portland or New York or places like that was just part of me wasn't ready to leave the South just yet. I mean, prior to that, I have never left Alabama. I've been on a plane once for a school trip, but my whole life has been Alabama, you know, Georgia, Florida at the most if I'm going on a trip. But I was a little worried about having too much of a culture shock, and I wanted to set myself up for success, at least in the sense where I could sing as a job and there was still some familiarity. And that's kind of how we found Nashville.
Yeah, I would say you're a shark in shark-infested waters down there, being a musician. Not that people eat each other, but it's a very competitive market, you know, and I think that you know, that what you do is just, you know, something in New York doesn't offer, the ability to do what you guys do. And I talked about this on a previous podcast. Like, there's expected 21 million tourists coming this year. I mean, that's a huge exposure for music. You know, people don't go to New York City to watch music, maybe a play here or there, but to see you on stage or to have that performance, I think is just an incredible thing. So there's a lot of talent there to serve that market, and people developing their skills, putting in their 10,000 hours, for lack of a better term, to get their dreams. And I think that just being in that environment makes you grow because you're around greatness. You know, not everyone's great, don't get me wrong. There's probably a lot of other things that you deal with in the musician circles, but for the most part, you have a lot of people trying to better their craft, you know, and pushing you to better yours.
Oh, absolutely. And I love that you said kind of a shark in shark-infested waters. The funny thing is, the band that I was kind of making my case for Nashville, the music was so weird and out there and experimental, and I fell in love with it. But I remember one of them saying, I want to be the weirdest band ever hit the scene for, you know, some of these bigger cities. And we actually ended up going on a little tour, just rinky-dink East Coast tour. And we went to New York and played Rubelod. It's this really cool venue inside of the storage unit. Like, it looks like
cool.
Acid became sentient in that warehouse. But we were so milquetoast compared to all the other bands. I thought we had something really individual and unique. And then I realized, like, if you're trying to be the weirdest band ever hit New York, you're going to fail. You just are. Same thing with Portland, you know, everyone's got their own thing and it's out there and it is a mecca for experimental music. But part of my thinking was, why don't we bring something different to Nashville? You know, you've got a lot of classic rock and a lot of country, and that kind of dominates the genre. like you have to, there's a supply demand there, and we would meet something that's not being supplied. Obviously now I've kind of, I think it's still a little proggy what we do. It's definitely more rock than our previous band, which was just very much experimental music. But I'm thankful for it, because I had to think so differently with the music we made there, that now I can recognize pattern, and I can recognize kind of what's oversupplied a little bit, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
Obviously, there are very distinct genres within original music in Nashville, and yeah. You can always kind of find a couple bands to parallel them to. And one of my favorite things is showing people a song that we made, and they can't really make a comparison. They're like, it kind of sounds like this, but not really, but kind of like this a little bit. And if people kind of struggle to describe what box you would fit into with the genre, then you know that you're making something kind of new, which I think is priceless.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned, and it's originality, right? You're sticking to what is true to you. You know, you're not doing it to sound like someone else or imitated. You're just expressing yourself, which is, I think, the way music should be done, or any, being an entrepreneur or anyone. It's like expressing your craft, you know, artists, whatever. It's pretty cool. But that being said, like you mentioned your dad and your mom and the influence of, even though they weren't musicians, that they had influence on you. I mean, did you sing like in the car with your parents? You mentioned like you'd hold up a show. So tell me a little bit about that, because they obviously encouraged you to do this. I mean, they obviously let you sing and do your thing because you have such confidence in it. I've got to assume they've encouraged you.
Oh, absolutely. They pushed me a ton. It's funny. My mom was just a pageant queen growing up, you know, very beautiful, and she would always sing at her pageants. So she wasn't a professional singer by any means, but she had like a very beautiful voice, and that was her talent. So she always loved kind of getting me prepped to go on stage, you know, and not be shy and really push. And my dad is, I wouldn't call him a musical person. He doesn't play anything, but I also don't know anybody that loves music more than him. Like, just absolutely loves it. He'll tell me stories from the 80s just of seeing all these bands that I idolize now, you know, for $30 at the Civic Center, you know, or smoking a joint with David Bowie just some random night because he wanted to meet the band and hung out behind the building. Like, he eats, sleeps, breathes it, loves it. And I remember, you know, when they had it was just the iPod Touches, and you had to buy all your music on Apple. This was before Spotify and everything was kind of big.
Yeah.
I didn't have any money, so I logged into my dad's iTunes and just downloaded all of his music onto my iPod. And so you're talking about 500, 600 songs just from the 80s. It's funny. I remember being little at this little rinky-dink water park in Alabama, and my friend pulled my earphone out to listen to what I was listening to. It was AC/DC. They're like, why do you like screamo? But
that's fun.
Yeah, no, it was just, I grew up on his taste, and I had a mom who never shied away from, you know, putting on a good show and presenting yourself well. So I had a lot of encouragement from both of them.
Well, and showmanship, right? Like professionalism, showmanship, respect for the music, stuff like that.
Absolutely. And I think my mom has been very good for, she's always taught me how to communicate properly and, you know, put on a good presentation of yourself and treat others well in a way that sticks with them. And I think that's been really integral to being networking, you know, and continuing down this path. And then my dad has just really shaped my taste and my love for rock, and just, I don't know, like I've had a really good support system for it. There wasn't a whole lot to do in Dothan, but they did all that they could to kind of prepare me to be out on my own, whatever it is that would do. And it's always just been a matter of, if you can support yourself, you know, following your dreams, then do it. We support you, you know?
Yeah. Would you say that they had the most influence on you in terms of like leadership and role models?
I would say, yeah, absolutely. They certainly did. Even the tumultuous times at home, watching how they handled it and kind of learning how I want to handle it going forward, they've definitely shaped how I deal with a city like Nashville and deal with negotiations and peacemaking and, you know, just Absolutely. Whatever you need to do.
Yeah, so I lost my question actually because I was on. But like, let's talk about like, did you idolize any singers growing up or any musicians
who
that you wanted to be like? I mean, you imitated maybe growing up trying to like perfect your craft.
Yeah, no, I it's funny. I think my voice is pretty gritty now. Like, there's a lot of distortion to it. But when I was younger, it was a very clean tone. Like, I didn't grow up with a raspy voice. It's kind of something that developed as I got older. But I have always just idolized Robert Plant. Like, Led Zeppelin is my favorite band. I've got them tattooed down both sides of my ribs. Like, I love them. I love Jimmy Page, John Paul Jones, John Bonham, all of them. They were super integral to my taste. And it's funny, Kent, my boyfriend, and my guitar player, before we even got down to Nashville, he asked me, like, do you notice that you enunciate the same way Robert Plant does, or, you know, you do the same blues licks that he does? And it wasn't something consciously that I did, but I took it as a huge compliment just because I love that man. And I also fell in love with Janis Joplin. She just has such a power about her, and it's not
absolutely,
it's not a perfect voice, but it's a powerful voice. And that is, again, one of the biggest compliments I can get, is people saying, you know, you're so little, but you have such power.
Yeah,
and it just, it reminds me of her, you know. But those are two huge influences. And as I've gotten older, I'll say, oh gosh, what's her name? Alabama Shakes, Brittany. Oh Lord, what's her last name? Okay, Brittany from Alabama Shakes is amazing. Amazing. There are some of the best rock albums to come out of the 2010s, 2020s. Like, amazing. Love her.
That's awesome. And so there's influence there, obviously, the hard rock, the AC/DC, the Led Zeppelin, obviously huge influence, and love for the music, and even Janis Joplin. I mean, I think it's because she gave it her all. You can tell she's giving it her all. She's not holding anything back when she's singing. You know, I think a lot of even people that get big, they sometimes hold themselves back, and that type of music, or even just singing it all and giving your all to the music. And the, I mean, I agree with you, Led Zeppelin just puts together some incredible music. Like, it just still blows me away sometimes, and it's always fun to hear that, you know. And when you guys play it and you guys put your own versions on it, just to keep things interesting, because you are different than them, you can't imitate them exactly. So that's always interesting when the covers, I know people want it, some people want it exactly the same, but I always think it's cool when you guys give it your twists, or you play it in the way that's special to you, almost like jam bands do, like Fish or Grateful Dead or stuff. They almost give it their own little twist sometimes, because it would probably get pretty repetitive if you didn't. And then you're also giving them honor, you know, like, I honor what you did. I respect what you did in your craft, and that's how it relates to me. So,
oh yeah, absolutely. I think it's subjective, because there's a lot of people that kind of scoff, you know, if you're covering it should be just like the record. But you even think of Heart doing Stairway to Heaven at the Kennedy Center Honors. You know, it wasn't just like the record. It was Heart's version of it, but it still paid homage and still recognized the influence and the talent that comes from a band. But you look at people, they say that music was so good in the 70s, 80s, you know, we miss it, there's nothing like it. And then you get someone like Greta Van Fleet, who admittedly have a lot of similarities, and then people get upset, you know. It's just, there always has to be an evolution of sound. And even with Greta, you know, their newest albums have definitely evolved. They're not so Led Zeppelin-y anymore. But I think it's finding a balance between being able to credit your influences and build upon them, you know?
Absolutely. I have a question for you, because you said you hadn't been very far and you did some touring and you went to some cities. Like, is it a goal for you, because you haven't traveled much as a child, or because of your circumstances, to maybe see the world, like actually go tour the world for music and be able to see it as well?
That would be amazing. I really would love that. There are certain, even on the East Coast tour, we drove the whole way up to New York and back down to Alabama. And it was a really great experience, but at the same time, I didn't feel like I got to, that's the farthest I've ever been from home, and I didn't really get to see anything. You know, we came in, played a show, and then left. And I know that's kind of how touring would be, but I would like to be more well-traveled, and I'd like to slow it down and get the time to kind of experience the musical culture from city to city, because it does change so much. I got to see that kind of on a small scale on that last tour, but it was so interesting. I mean, Athens, Georgia has this great, you know, all the way from folk to Prague, just a really interesting take on rock in general. And then you go up to New York, where it, like I said, like, you will not be the weirdest in New York. There was some kind of riot girl bands that were so interesting. I've just never heard anything like it, but I'd love to see different cultures, especially musically.
It's interesting, because I'm the same way with food. Like, I like experiencing cities through food, like the different food from every city, whether it's the United States or the world. You know, mm-hmm. That's probably why I do what I do and why I'm going in the direction I'm going. But I can see that it would be the same as music, because, like, also being and trying food, you end up in places that have bands all over the world, especially when your schedule's all messed up in zones and stuff, time zones. So I just imagine that would be a cool experience. And I think, like, a lot of musicians may gain, like, further perspective or ideas, because, you know, we're a culmination of our life when we write or when we express ourselves. And or we chase a dream, or we become, you know, chase whatever. Food has a huge impact on me growing up on a farm, you know, so on and so forth, you know, being in restaurants and food trucks and doing food for hospitals. So it's heavily influenced me, and I found great purpose, and it's almost like my vehicle by which I express myself. So it's the same for music. Like, what is the dream? Like, I mean, I know you try to not, you said grandiose, but like, where do you want this to go? Like, where are you hoping writing the album goes? What are you hoping, like, deep inside of you? What have you dreamed of, vulnerably, like, that this would go? Does that make sense?
I think, yeah, no, it makes sense. I think that first coming in with the goal, you know, I want music to pay my bills, and there was a certain part of me that wanted that validation from show to show. That'll never go away. You know, if you're a musician and you're pursuing it, there also is a desire for, you know, validation and a desire to perform. And I think I've gotten to where I'm comfortable with not everyone's going to like my voice. I like my voice, and I feel like a lot of people do. And now I think the next graduating step would be, I would love to touch people with my voice and my writing. You know, I would love to write a song and, you know, that have an emotional impact on somebody, and just kind of widespread that as much as I can. Because it does mean a lot to me. My songs mean a lot to me. My words mean a lot to me. And it would mean the world if they meant something to someone else, you know, and touch them the same way that I'm touched by music.
Where do the ideas come from? Are they life experiences? Do they come to you? Or are there something you see? Like, how does it come to you? How do you express yourself? Or where do the ideas come from for your songs?
I think when I was younger, I tried to write on other people's experiences and kind of disguise it just well enough, because there was a fear of people putting things together in my lyrics and kind of dissecting it in a way that made me feel a little vulnerable. Yeah. But I found my best works have come from me being vulnerable. You know, there's one of the best poems I ever wrote was about a fight I had with a family member, you know, and it wasn't It got an award at my school, and it didn't say any names, you know. It was about, again, birds. but I think it's just, inspiration comes from, I feel like I can be bleak in my writing sometimes, but that really is, it's therapy for me a lot. Inspiration comes from working through my feelings with a pen, and, you know, not necessarily having to be right on the nose about it, but it's the same thing about, what I love so much about poetry is dissecting all the hidden meanings inside of works, you know, yellow wallpaper. Just, there's so much symbolism within writing, and there can be so many different interpretations that I can't fear being vulnerable or fear someone putting together what I'm thinking, because that's the beauty of it, is being able to put it together.
Yeah, I agree with you. Being able to express
my emotional experiences and figuring out how I want to write those out.
That's very cool. I think that what you do, and that's exactly it. It's, people can relate to you and hear your music and be like, oh my gosh, I feel that. That's happened to me too. Oh my gosh. And she's so brave to talk about it, you know, because I think that's part of, you know, the gift that you've been given and you've grown with skill and hard work, you know, something that was planted inside you, you've had to grow. And you've been able to do it in a way that I agree with you. It's a talent that you'll get to express yourself with the world, and not everyone has to love it, but you sure as hell get to make a huge impact with your voice, you know, and how many people you impact just in Nashville that hear you sing on a regular basis, you know? And so I think it's just, I respect it big time. I think it's so brave that you guys do it, that you're able to do it, you know, that you take yourselves and you take the risks that you take, because I think it is following a dream, and most people can't do that. What is your favorite part, honestly? Like, if you could say your favorite part of being a musician, like, you know, is it the camaraderie of your team, as an example? Like, what do you enjoy the most about what you do?
I love my coworkers. I love a million things about it. I love the people that I work with. I love connecting with people on a musical level, you know, looking someone in the eyes and just both of you knowing y'all did a really cool thing just now. And I also love making an impact on people in the audience. I think I was telling Kent this the other day, it sounds so stupid, but making people cry, you know, it feels so good because there's so much emotion put into songs. Even if I didn't write them, you know, I feel so much of the lyrics, and when I feel like other people feel that too, you know, it really impacts me and them, I think, on the same level. And I feel like there's a sense of understanding there and connection through strangers with music. I remember a couple of weeks ago I was doing a show, and there was a group of friends out for a birthday party, and the girl whose birthday it was blind, and they just wanted her to hear something she liked, you know, because she was out. I think there had to be some degree of separation with that, but we finally found a song that she liked that I gave a try. And, you know, once I got it and she started crying, her friend started crying, I started crying, you know, because there's just this connection through music and this emotional release. That's my favorite part, when I feel connected to strangers just through singing.
Yeah, it's incredible. It's an amazing thing when something like that happens. I don't do it through music, but I do it through when, like, you're working in a team, or you get it, or you inspire each other to be greater, or you motivate each other to be greater. It's one of those crazy things for me, but I know exactly what you're talking about, because you have those as a band also. Like, all of a sudden you guys, like, fall into sync and everything, just whatever song, maybe it's a cover song, but you all of a sudden just hit it so well, and all the fans get it, and everyone in the audience is, like, cheering, like, just blown away. And I saw you guys snitch one time, you know, you're with Monty's band, but there was a click there. And I've seen you guys play at some other bands with your band, at some other honky tonks with your band. And I just think there's these moments that you guys, like, get almost in perfect unison, if you know what I'm talking about. It's like where you really hit something, like everyone feels it in the audience. Do you know what I mean? And it's almost like the emotional thing you talked about, but it's also like this weird motivating thing, like almost validation for your craft and being a band. Do you know what I mean?
It's an adrenaline hit, you know, every time you get in sync with your bandmates. It's a hit of adrenaline, and it's this euphoric feeling, like you just get sucked into it. And it kind of goes off of, you know, when you listen to a song and it just hits you, like you can feel it right in the stomach, you know. It's just everything you feel put into words,
like elephants on your chest. Yeah, as I refer to it. Like, all of a sudden it almost takes your breath away.
Exactly. And being able to see that firsthand, you know, see the people in front of you get that feeling that you're feeling, especially with cover gigs. I know it sounds funny, but, you know, I'll sing a song that means so much to me and I watch people feel what I'm feeling. That is one of my favorite parts of the job.
I think it's really just there's just so much going on there. And like I said, it is a little bit of sharks in a shark tank, but there's so many people that are now coming there just for the music, and they're realizing it's not just country music, and that there's so much other music and stuff evolving there. And I think that's so cool that you get to be a part of it. As we sort of wrap things up here, what is something that you would tell yourself maybe 5 years ago that you know now? Or what is something that, if there's other people out there trying to find themselves in the way that you did, what advice would you give them?
I think one of the main things is the difference between being a dreamer and being someone who gets after it is creating. The thing that makes an artist is a desire to create. And it's really important. If you have something that you love that makes your world go round, you get one trip on this earth and you have to chase it. You know, don't put that to the wayside for a societal idea of what's a fulfilling life. You get to put the parameters around what makes you fulfilled. You know, and it's not always going to fall in your lap, but you will find your mecca, so to speak, somewhere. It's out there. I wish I would have gone earlier. I think some of the fear and the expectations just of getting a stable job, you know, or maybe starting a family unit the way that's expected of us, especially in the South, held me back a little bit just for fear. And life is too short to be scared. You have to chase what you love.
I agree with you. I'm going to ask another question real quick. How much does discipline, like showing up consistently, being on time? I've noticed you're very good at that. Communication. I want to talk about those three things almost real quickly, because they're things that I think are your superpowers. I know we talk about singing, but to me, I talk about character that builds our skills. And there's like, you communicate well, you have consistency, and you have discipline. I know consistency and discipline may sound like the same thing. It's not. You have the discipline to do, you know, your craft, but you have the consistency to stay doing it. So there's the discipline to write, but then there's the consistency to do it all the time, and then you communicate well. How, like, let's talk about that, or where do you feel that some of your core values are that really, you know, separate you, or would separate a leader, for example? Because I think I just mentioned your three. Obviously, singing, being a musician is a huge talent that you have, but it's also these character integrity that I would say that you have. Because it makes you different than a lot of artists and a lot of people out there, for sure.
Well, I know that working in bars, there's a lot of drunk people, and there's a lot of people that'll just be assholes, or even just singing, you know, there's posting stuff on TikTok. I didn't want to post anything just for fear of getting nasty comments, and then I got them and I was like, okay, like, I'm not gonna stop, you know. I think a huge part of it is just letting it roll off your back and still finding it in your heart to be kind to people, you know. I've always said I'll just be as good to others as I can be, and you know, at the end of my life, whether it's answering to a creator or, you know, that's it, the end, at the very least, I can say, and my legacy can be, you know, she was kind, at the very least. No one can take that from you. And then as far as discipline and everything, it kind of goes back to the writer's block thing. I think fear of failure or fear of creating something bad holds so many people back from actually taking that first step. You know, you have to have the missteps, and you have to have the mistakes, and you have to have the bad rough drafts to get to what means something to you. You know, you're going to have detractors. You're going to have people that say nasty stuff just because, you know, people show what they know. And if they don't know love, they're not going to show it, you know. So it's just kind of approaching life with radical empathy and also centering your own happiness, you know, not at the expense of others, but yeah, as your first priority. And I am happier when I feel like I'm being kind.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think one of the greatest skills that anyone ever instills in anyone, or any mentor can give anyone, or any coach or parent, is the random acts of kindness. Like doing something random, like the golden rule, or doing something onto others as you would have do to you. It also means not only the way that we treat them, but it's that kindness thing that matters. Like, it doesn't
it's
just
huge.
Have to be an act. Yeah, go on.
I remember I went to the Basement East, and I was talking to some guys that used to work there, and there was this one band that's pretty big that stopped by, and I think the music wasn't really their thing, and they said to me, they're like, we wanted so bad not to like them, but oh my gosh, those guys were just the nicest, most humble, down to earth, like, we love those guys. So that's, I think strength of character is huge.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I think that a lot of people sacrifice that for short-term fame or short-term money in any industry, or, you know, the short-term outcome. We get too attached to the outcome, and we don't get attached to why we do it, or how our impact may be legacies or generations, not just on us. Like, you never know. I mean, think about how many people that have passed in music or being an entrepreneur that we still talk about, or leaders. like if you have impact and you do what you like, you can go on forever. You know, our legacy, Jesus, is like 2,000 plus years of legacy. So, I mean, there's that whole thing. And I think as humans, when we realize that sometimes it's just happens on its, in its own way, and we don't know the impact after we're gone, to your point, that you were saying, you know, to the creator or to, that's it. And I agree with you. If I'm going to do it, I'm all in. Like, I'm all in, period. And that's the way it has to be. Like, if I get one shot at this, I am not holding back. I don't want to lay dying and regret I didn't do anything or didn't live in the moment and didn't, like, do the best that I could, but also live a good, kind life, you know? Because it's like, oh, he was rich. No one says that when you die. No one cares. Like, even if they do, that's, like, not something I want to be weighed by, you know, if I was or if you were. I think all of us want to have impact. And when we have real impact, magically, we have wealth, but not always monetarily, you know? And that's what the important part is about things. And, you know, who wants to be rich? No, I wanted to have a life filled with wealth, friends, impact, bettering the lives of humans, you know, bettering the world, the planet, maybe even the animals on it, you know, giving them a better chance. And so I think that that's what it comes to. And, you know, at least that's my definition of success. And I feel like that's yours as well, like that impact piece, the being able to connect with people and have a positive influence on them. Would you say that's true?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's like you said, when people are on their deathbed, no one says that I regret not working more, you know, or I regret being so nice to everybody. I have a lot of stuff I could have said, you know. I think some of the happiest times in my life, even predating Nashville, is being broke as a joke in high school, but around people I love, you know, singing in church on Sundays and scraping together all my quarters so I could go to Taco Bell. You know, I didn't have any money to my name, but I was fulfilled because I did what I love, and I surrounded myself with people that I love that made me feel like a good person as well. You have to surround yourself with people that bring out the best in you.
Yeah, I agree with that. One, I actually had this conversation today, and it's so important to surround yourself by great people, you know, where they want you to be great, or you, by nature of being around them, want to be greater, you know, and they want the best for you and you want the best for them. It's a crazy thing, but I think we oddly need to be selfish in our growth as leaders so we pave a path, but at the same time, we need to be unselfish in giving away what we acquire. And I mean skill, I mean by giving to humans, I mean growing those around us, and which allows other people to grow us. It always brings that into our world, and it's almost like an inverse. Like, what do you mean? Like, thinking selfishly is growing others, but that's what it is, because if I grow others, by nature, I grow, and if I'm around growing individuals, I'm growing too. And it's like...
That's kind of what I was trying to verbalize earlier.
Yeah. So I think
that...
Go ahead.
Putting yourself first, but still prioritizing how you treat others. That's a perfect way to put that.
Yeah, because you don't want to get off path or lose who you are, you know, or go through things like that. Gosh, I appreciate you doing this, and I can't believe what a great story you have. And, you know, down the road, I'd love to have you back on. We'll tell your story again, maybe continually if we can. And one of the things that I enjoy about your story and who you are and meeting you is you're so well grounded, and you have the right perspective, and you don't shy away from who you are, and you chase your dream with honesty and integrity. And that's a big deal for a lot of people, and I don't think everyone always does that. They sacrifice a lot, their self-respect and their confidence, and that's not who you are. And I think that's a big deal, you know, as someone who's been around quite a long time,
Thank you.
Really hustled and been through a lot of the same things, just in a different arena. And like I mentioned, everyone, part of being in Nashville was like, I was like a boxer, because I'm an entrepreneur and I'm back with people that are hustling and in a very concentrated shark tank. And like it motivated me to do more podcasts. It motivated me to expand my horizons. It motivated me to work on a TV show. It's motivated me to do my own businesses and food called Freedom Foods. And so it got me back in the game like I had been for 24 years. And I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to do this again, but I don't want to be lost, because this is one of my purposes, is to be an entrepreneur and grow other humans and create and stuff like that. So I feel like for you and for the group that you have down there, you know, it's beautiful what you guys have, and it's beautiful that you guys get to grow each other and have the relationship you guys have. And I think they have an outstanding leader in you, because you are a natural leader as well. And I've talked about that before. I even think a few months ago, you and Drew, I texted you guys, and Drew's also in Monty's band. I talked a little bit about him yesterday. I'll convince him to come out of his shell and be on my podcast.
He's amazing.
You know, there's just such, you guys are so young and you have such leadership abilities. It's pretty incredible, and such supportive parents that really instilled a lot of confidence in you guys and helped, you know, not make the same mistakes they did and really get over your fears so you could be, you know, a legacy and go be a generation that achieves your dreams, you know, and lift up the family legacy. I think that's a beautiful thing. Whether they totally realize they do it or not, that's what's going on, you know. And they have a daughter in your case that's going to really make influence. I'm confident of that. You know, you're just an incredible person, and you've got your head screwed on right, and you just express yourself and communicate extremely well. So that goes a long way, and you're consistent. Like I said, most people aren't consistent over the long run. They don't have the discipline to do it. They get distracted. They start doubting themselves. You know, they're discouraged. But you don't, you know, I don't feel that that's who you are. I feel that you have everything very focused, and you have a good support system with your individuals you're around, which is amazing as well. So thank you for coming on the show. I hope I didn't shower you too much. I just want to make sure that you never get off path, because life at 23 can come with a lot of obstacles, but I feel like you've got your head on straight. So I just want to encourage that someone who's rooting for you for sure.
That really means the world. Thank you so much for having me and for being such a consistent support since the day we met. I appreciate your friendship.
Yeah, I appreciate you and all the time that we've spent. And I look forward to telling more of your story and seeing you guys again when I'm back in Nashville here over the next few months. So,
yeah, absolutely.
Thank you, everyone, for listening in. I love you guys. I appreciate you guys. Thanks for supporting the podcast. If you're a fan of Lily's, give her episode like major stars. It is an algorithm. And I don't know how else to put this other than to tell you, like, the best way to support someone is to support them all the way and just and support their episode. And I think, you know, Lily's story should be heard. You know, I think that your story should be heard. And I appreciate it. You guys can find us on Spotify or wherever else you grow yourself through podcasts. And Lily, will you tell us where they can find you on Instagram, where they can find your band on Instagram? Let's tell us all the handles and all that and all the different social media platforms you're on.
Okay, you can find me on Instagram at Lily in Bloom, L-I-L-L-I-E in Bloom, like the Nirvana song. And my band is called Full Hollow the Band on Instagram, F-U-L-L-H-O-L-L-O-W the Band. And you can also find Full Hollow on Spotify or wherever you stream your music.
Yeah, and just so everyone knows who listens in, I will put all of that stuff in the notes. And on Justin the Food Entrepreneurs, if you guys go to those episodes, to the ones that are from Nashville where I do the Nashville Food Entrepreneurs, I link all the local bands and stuff and individuals I've made friends with or hung around in Nashville that I think are worth seeing. So if you're there for the food, you can also see these bands. It's just part of, I believe, in growing people. So it's like, why not help build these environments? So I appreciate it, and I appreciate everyone listening. And thank you again, Lily. This was awesome. I learned a lot. Like, I learn every episode. So I appreciate again. And again, everyone in the audience, I love you guys. I appreciate you guys, and we're out.